everybody. Welcome to the very refreshed 95th episode of Cracking the Spine. My name is Sean.
I'm Zane.
I'm Thirsty Boy Josh.
Zane's already rolling her eyes.
No,
I just got started.
It was a good... It wasn't really an eye roll. It was like...
Here we go again.
95 episodes.
Yeah.
It's so many episodes.
On 95 of them, though. When did I start?
Neither was Zane.
Neither was I. But I was thinking about how my first episode was... Sean just told me it was episode 9. And
I told it to her before we started recording, guys.
It's a lot of episodes.
It is. It's like 84.
What was mine?
Yours was, I think,
69?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, whenever I think of you, Josh, I think it's 69.
Oh my.
Oh, my.
Whenever I think of you, Sean, I think of 96.
Yeah, wait, what?
Because that's...
Maybe 77.
We like to rub our butts together.
No, I told you I don't like that.
Oh, you don't?
No, as many times as you've tried, I've said to you, like, that's not...
Well, I only think about what I like most of the time. We gotta fill time while Zane finds
this. Let's keep vamping while Zane looks up this thing that's super important all
of
a sudden.
Go to the tome.
Jeez. I didn't realize I was so crucial to the process.
Whoa.
You didn't realize you were so crucial to this show?
I didn't, actually.
Well... Spoiler alert.
Since most of the time you talk over me, so.
How am I going to do the episode without a cheesesteak in me?
How can Josh and I talk over you without you here?
How are you going to get mad at us if you're not here to hear it?
Answer so we can not let you answer.
Yeah, hurry.
What was that? What?
What we said was, hey Josh, what have you been doing? What have you been up to, Josh?
I was in Canada, so I didn't read shit.
There's no reading going on? Oh, actually what I was on a trip. I wanted to ask you. Maybe if it's not, you know, breaking some kind of non-disclosure agreement you have with another show that you're on.
I have many of those.
What happened when you got to the border on both, like, leaving and coming back?
Coming into Canada, the lady looked at my passport and said, "Could you roll the window down, please, sir?" to the back, and I looked out the window and I went like this. I waved.
He ducked his head down and waved with his right hand.
And she looked like she hated her life, and she was very attractive, very beautiful. And
that's super important, apparently.
But she looked like she hated her job. And then she let us in.
Most attractive people do.
When Dan and I went to Canada...
Wow, she interrupted you this time.
It's okay.
I wasn't talking.
I was done.
I wanted to hear the trip back.
When we came to the border, they're just like, "Hey, yeah, all right, have fun.
They didn't look at your passport or anything?
They did. Okay. They looked at our passports.
How recently
it was like a year and a half ago.
And that was leaving the United States to go
leaving
to Canada.
Leaving the United States to go to Canada.
Yeah.
We rolled up and they were like, "Bonjour, have fun."
Wait, they said bonjour?
Yeah, it's Spanish for Bon Jovi.
And
they know she's from New Jersey.
That's where
she was born.
No way.
Very different from our return trip.
My return trip.
Where were you born? New Jersey.
Were you really born in New Jersey?
Yes.
Oh my God. I never knew this.
Well.
Oh no!
Bon Jovi!
Zane! What are you even?
Your parents lived in the boonies. You had to go to Jersey for a decent hospital.
So, anyway, how
was your return?
Well, there was a very attractive man this time.
Mm.
No, I was not there that time.
He took our passports. He didn't give a shit. He was like, whatever. Welcome back to America.
Dude, when we came back into the States...
Did he recognize you as internet celebrity Josh Henderson from Continue Show? And
think so.
All right.
When we came back in, they, like we were not allowed to leave the car. And he, like, scrutinized our passports. And then he went through our luggage.
Oh, really?
And,
What did you say to him? What did you say?
My husband has, he's a bike guy, obviously, and he has like this bike pump in the back of his car, and it has like a digital readout on it.
Right.
And the guy was like moving our luggage around, and because he was like rummaging through it.
Yeah.
And we were sitting in the car, and
he was keeping us safe?
Yes. And he hit the bike pump, and it's metallic, and it made a noise, and he was like, "What is this? What's here in the back?" And Dan was like, "It's a bike pump. It's a fucking bike pump." And the guy was like, oh, it's a bike pump. Like, it was...
Ha, 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 ha. And it, funny, I could have almost taken your fucking it was freedom ridiculous. Away from you.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. He was like, I'm not going to find anything in here, am I? And we were like, no, dude, like, we're fine. We were on our honeymoon. Like, what, Jesus Marco Christ. Polo? It was ridiculous.
It's just a riddle.
Drug but it was stash. So,
over here.
It was so different than going into Canada. Like, going into Canada, they were like, yeah, what's up? All right, have fun. You don't have anything illegal back there, do you? We were like, no. They were like,
I think
right,
it was
cool.
harder going in than coming back. That dude didn't give a shit.
Coming back was crazy.
I know, right? From all those people that have been to Canada, like all of us, you guys?
I don't want
to... Up to and including the two of you? I've never been to Canada.
Really?
Yeah, I've only left the country.
It's rad. I love Canada.
I've only left the country once.
I know.
My honeymoon.
I didn't think it was weird. America. It was like America's.
Oh, I loved it.
It was weird.
It was weird. I would go back in a heartbeat.
I flew to Spain, the day after the election that George W. Bush got reelected. So do your math.
2004.
Yeah, 2004. And when we landed in Spain, the Madrid airport was full of Spanish guys with Uzis, like legit, like machine guns.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was fun.
Well, that's what Times Square is like now, if you've been.
I've been.
They're like, hey, I'm walking around with a fucking AR-15 because terrorism.
Oh, yeah, but like an AR-15 in New York City feels different than an Uzi in Madrid, I think, because to me, it was like, I'm in a foreign nation.
You're
where I don't
speak interloper.
The language. Yeah, I was the outsider.
Right.
Like, the guys in New York City, I'm like, yeah, you look so big and bad with your AR-15.
Right.
You're not going to actually shoot anybody or anybody that looks like me.
Right.
I went to Italy in, I think it would have been 2003. And I remember being excited, like when we landed in Rome and seeing like graffiti and stuff that hated Bush.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, good. Like, the rest of the world is also really unhappy with Bush. Like, it's not just me being, like,
this?
A grumpy teenager. Like, it was like, oh, cool. Like,
remember?
The rest of the world is against this shit, too.
See,
like, I remember being kind of relieved.
My experience was more like, oh, look how much Bush has really upset the rest of the world that they just point machine guns at everyone everywhere.
Yes, but I think because I was a teenager, it was like, oh, it's not just like teen angst. Like, this is actually like
a
big problem.
At that point.
Those halcyon days of President Bush.
Spreading my...
Boy.
Just wondering, boy, when will I get long division down?
Oh my God.
Did you not know long division as a teenager?
Not until I was a... Later teenager?
In 2003?
I'm pretty sure I learned long division in fourth grade.
Same, what are you reading?
We had a bunch of power outages.
Uh-huh.
So I read a bunch.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Man.
There was like a million.
Although it did take me, most of that was finishing The Lies of Locke Lamora, because that book is really long.
But you finished it?
But I finished it.
And?
I liked it. The thing is, I always liked it. I just wasn't that motivated to keep reading.
Okay.
I just
Rewind
found it very easy to put down. But I liked it a lot. And definitely by, like, the third act of that book, I was like, yo, like, I want to see...
She's nodding, guys.
What, like, I want to read more of this series.
Okay.
You know, like, I was, like, into it. Of course, you know, then I was less into it, but I still want to read it.
This is a roller coaster ride.
There's twists and turns at the end, but it definitely got me into it. I just feel bad that it took me. I mean, I kept thinking in my head, I was like, I'm not very far into this book. Maybe that's why I'm not into it. I was like 250 pages into that book, and I just wasn't grabbing me. It wasn't bad.
It
just wasn't grabbing me.
I gave up on it the first time I read it. So,
but I did. I finished it, and I liked it.
Okay. There's two more.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited.
The Truths of Locke Lamora and the of Locke Lamora.
And I also read Baby Teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By Zoya Stage.
And it was...
it's a lot. There's a lot. I'm going to make an effort to see if I can get an interview with her on the show.
Yeah.
Because as a father...
As someone who never wants to be a parent, man, do I feel confident in my decision.
I can't remember. Did we talk about what it's about?
I think we touched on it a little bit, but we could say it again.
It's
been a couple episodes.
It's written in alternating chapters from mother to daughter,
mm-hmm.
and the daughter is mute. So all of her chapters are internal monologue. Like, okay. no spoilers there, right? So far, so good?
No, there's no spoilers.
Also, she's a demon child.
Well, like some would say most children are.
Well, you've not met... Wait, you have met my children. Okay.
I went on vacation with you with them. With one. The other one wasn't around yet.
There was
yet.
Only one.
Yeah. We were working on it at that point. I mean, you can't call it work if you like what you're doing.
But yeah, and it's horror-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also kind of not...
No, it's a mix between horror and suspense thriller.
Suspense is a good word for it. Thriller is maybe not the word that I'd use, but suspense is a good word.
It's one of those things where
it's disturbing.
You're not cheering for the narrator the whole time?
You're kind of not cheering for anyone.
Yeah. All right, let's see.
You guys are really trying not to give it away.
I am. Well, it's not out yet.
Okay, yeah. So
it's not out until June.
Okay, so you can't give it away.
And we're on a weekly schedule now, guys.
It's almost June.
Boy, did you just jinx it, man.
Yeah, you blew it. Is that a trumpet, or what is that?
Anyway, and next up on deck is the Speak graphic novel.
Okay.
Which I'm really excited about.
I'm still working my way through The Power. I talked about that last time, right?
Power.
No, I didn't. I guess I didn't. The Power is it's a novel by a woman named Naomi Alderman, and it is a science fiction story that is written as a historical document of a time that women discovered that
that's what I thought.
So I haven't finished it yet.
We don't have the excuse anymore of like
forgetting.
It was 3 months ago.
Yeah. I mean, everything basically in my brain was 3 months ago. So,
and I don't have the excuse anymore of being like, you guys, I read like 17 books since the last time we talked.
But how many books did you read since last time?
Yeah, how many?
I haven't finished the book we talked about last week.
Wow, dude.
Right? That's crazy.
Dude.
That's crazy.
I'm the new Josh.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of which.
Josh, what did you read?
I read a bunch of Signs on the Highway.
Were they both in French and
that counts,
English?
Sweetie.
They were
that
in
counts.
English. I Wait. Wasn't in the French part. I was in Ottawa.
I thought that all the signs in Canada had to be in...
No.
It depends on what province you're in.
I saw Canadian Bacon, directed by Michael Moore. With Alan Alda and John Candy.
They had a queen crown on them, because they like the queen still.
So they don't all have to be in French?
Mm-mm.
No.
What the fuck, dude?
No, it's like province by province.
Yeah, I was
it's
in...
It's kind of...
Well, that's rude to the French.
Ontario.
It's a little bit... It's based on, like... like influence and government.
I'm already
over it.
I don't care.
Dude, Canada's
but it's also
weird.
It's based on like population. Like if there's a lot of French Canadians in that area, then signs
pretty
are more
sure
likely
I said
to be
it was
French.
Over it.
Oh boy.
But anyway, what? I think we should take a break.
I
because
totally
you guys
I'm leaving.
Because tonight we're gonna talk about something that a listener suggested.
What?
Hell yeah.
Because we've been begging.
We got those now.
For a couple of weeks. And we got one.
We bagged one. We bagged a fan.
We got one!
And hopefully after these last, I'm guessing, 38 minutes of opening.
It's, yeah.
Feels like it.
All right.
In Sean years.
Wait, what?
We'll be right back. Episode 95 of Cracking the Spine. I'm still Zane.
I'm Josh.
This is the Clyde Simmons episode, right, Josh?
Nope, he was 96.
You idiot.
Michael Kendricks is 95.
He won the Super Bowl.
He did.
Are you sure about that? All right, I'm sure you're sure. All right, so stay tuned for next week for the Clyde Simmons episode. All we're going to talk about is Clyde Simmons.
All three facts about him. His first name is Clyde. His last name is Simmons.
And his first and last name
is Clyde Simmons.
I don't know who we're talking about.
You know what? It's fine. Yeah. So, hey, Sean, what are we talking about? Well, Sean. No?
No, it's fine.
Well, nobody else asked me.
I thought you were going to segue it, just, you know.
I was going to segue. We were too busy talking about whoever the fuck.
Clyde Simmons.
Zane, give me a segue.
Hey, Sean. Oh, what are we talking about?
My God, so organic.
It's like...
Well, it's a good thing you asked, Zane, because I would like to tell you. It's actually...
I wish that you would.
It's based on something we talked about a couple of weeks back. Not the last episode, I think.
Episode
93. And it is from a listener named John Glessner. Mm-hmm. And... You know, we've always said that if you guys, listeners...
It was episode 92.
I'm going to let that go. I don't care. I don't...
Episode 93. Anyway, keep going.
Go.
Okay. It was the episode where we talked about the downfall of Barnes & Noble and them laying off all of their staff and what it means to books and how I felt awful about defending Barnes & Noble, and mm-hmm. we had a whole conversation about that.
Go listen to it.
You should. And tell your friends to listen to it as well.
And your mom.
So, some people are friends with their moms.
What's that like?
I don't know.
Oh, doesn't your mom listen to the show?
I don't let my mom listen to anything. Oh, okay. There's strict rules in my house about what can be said to me. There's a whole contract going on.
Don't look at him in the eye.
Don't look at me in the eye, Red Skittles, please.
Anyway, this is an email from John Glessner, and the subject is Conglomerate's follow-up. Mm-hmm. It opens, "Hi, gang."
Hi.
I think that's us.
Hi, John.
I'm really excited to have the return of week-to-week shows. Can't get enough of y'all.
Thank you.
Agreed. I can't get enough of me either.
Edit in something funny.
John, Zane doesn't like to hear your opening. She just wants to get you. She wants you to get to the meat.
Yeah.
So, okay.
It's John. Yeah, that's definitely it. It's John.
So, here's where we get to the meat, Zane. So, listen up.
Okay. You need to cool it.
Thanks for the insight into the book industry. I never mm-hmm. considered the macro impact of a B&N, Barnes & Noble, collapse. Question. Preference for streaming services, parentheses, Spotify, Netflix, etc., seems to be the major driver in the downfall of CD and DVD sales. Mm-hmm. However, there isn't really a large-scale equivalent service for books. Additionally, ebook popularity has fallen, indicating a centralized streaming-esque service may not be sustainable in the future. There certainly will be a huge impact if when Barnes & Noble goes under, but do you think the printed book market has a better chance than music and video at surviving a major blow to the industry without a huge alternative for consuming literature? And then he says, always looking forward to the next episode. Sean's the best. Josh could stop talking. It would be okay. Zane's tolerable.
That's wow.
Let's put that on my headset.
You got tolerable?
I'm tolerable.
Some of that stuff at the end may have been paraphrasing on my part.
Paraphrasing.
Or made up entirely.
But the isn't that what paraphrasing
that
means?
That is super duper what it means.
Yeah. I'm paraphrasing here.
The essential question, I actually think the essential question is important, and it surprises me that we didn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. The answer is yes. They will survive.
Books
will always survive.
I agree with that.
I actually am not as optimistic as you guys about this.
Always.
I think that without a major retail element mm-hmm. to drive the business of selling words to people in paper form.
Okay.
The publishing industry will have a hard time continuing the way that they.
But what did people do before Barnes & Noble? They bought books elsewhere, and then people will just do that again.
Yeah, but...
But think about with music, the whole thing with music is recorded music. So if you don't need a CD anymore, then your industry collapses because you can literally have a magical device in your pocket that plays you the thing you want whenever you want.
But it's books are different than both music and movies, because what we've seen in the last year or so is that people want to hold physical books.
Yeah.
E-book sales are down significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Print book sales are up, though not as significantly. But people do, I think books differ a lot. Like, music is something, it's intangible anyway. Like,
right.
You didn't need to hold that CD
exactly.
case.
That's exactly what I'm saying, yeah.
Like, you were participating in it or
right.
consuming it. I think books do demand a little bit more physicality.
Yeah.
But I think what, like, the pirating era taught us, and then, like, sort of the coming of, like, the streaming era.
Thanks, Napster.
People, if given the choice.
Yeah.
People are okay with paying for these things.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of times it's about access.
Right.
And so when you were sort of cut off from having access, easy access to music or movies or television, you found a way to consume that.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you know, with Netflix and streaming services and stuff, people were okay. They were okay with not pirating things anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, sure, I'll pay a Netflix subscription.
Right.
And I will happily pay.
If it's reasonable.
You know, if it's reasonable.
Right.
And, you know, now we're sort of seeing the backlash because they went, oh, you'll pay for subscription.
Now we're going
to gouge
you.
What if you have to pay for every single
yeah.
channel ever? You know?
CBS.
Right. But there has always been free access to books.
That's true.
It's a library.
It's the library.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I realize libraries have fallen out of favor.
Not with my mom.
Well, in communities that have the resources to support them, libraries have not fallen out of
right.
favor.
Right.
But I think that, again, my point is the,
like his question is a macro question. So I think we should address this from a macro point of view.
Macaroni point
like,
of view.
Like, rather than going, my community supports this.
Right, 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 right.
I think we should look at it as more.
I agree.
Okay, I was just.
She gonna
but
stab
the point
you.
Is, I, people want easy access to things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that people are opposed to paying for books. And I don't, you know, if it's too difficult to get a hold of a book, absolutely people. And I know pirating books is absolutely a thing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I have a couple of different things I want to say about this, because mm-hmm. this email, I thought this would make a great conversation because I have a couple of different ways to look at this, because he brought up the music model
right.
and the book model. And I think what has happened, what we've seen with the music industry is for a long time, obviously, you know, the big record stores disappeared, and we looked at streaming or pirating as a way to get music.
Yeah.
But what you're starting to see now is a resurgence of vinyl.
Sure.
I think, you know, if you go to
yeah.
a lot of clothing stores, like not music stores, like there isn't really a record, a chain record store. There are indie record stores
yeah.
that exist. But there are a lot of places that sell music in vinyl form because people want to have an artifact. And don't take this the wrong way. I feel like it's a millennial thing. I feel like...
Oh, here we go.
For a long time, what has happened is the quote-unquote digital revolution
uh-huh.
that started with iPods and led to iPhones and all your music being condensed into one place,
mm-hmm.
there's a resurgence of the idea of you want to own the thing to be able to
yeah,
be
but
yeah,
music
but I still
is...
think it's about access, because the part of the reason why we were driven to pirate music and stuff is that access was being withheld
yeah,
from
denied.
Consumers. It was buying an album was like that you needed a key to buy that album. You could only buy it in the store. You had to go to the store. Yeah. You had to buy it there. And that was the only place you could hear some of those songs. And it was ridiculously expensive. And if they didn't have it, well, tough luck. Like, access was being withheld. And it was like, I want to be able to listen. Yeah. Don't you want me to consume your fucking product?
What you're saying, though, I think, Zane, too, is, like, we're missing, like, the big thing. Like, you said iPods and stuff. Like, computers, we just went around the problem. We were like, well, I don't need to do that anymore. I could just get it. And, like, the easiness of just getting the music was half the reason why you stole stuff, pirated it, whatever.
No,
but with books, like, I really think that, like, they're not going to stop printing books. And, like, I'm not going to read a book on a computer. Like, I've tried it, and I'm like, this is horrible.
I think we all tried it. And, yeah. And the consensus is, like, yeah, can I read a book on a computer? Do I want to?
That was the point that I was going to pivot off of with the music thing was, you know, I'm not discounting the idea that, like, you can, you know, you don't want to pay the entry fee to get into the store to buy the music. You just want to hear the music. You want to listen to the music of the band that you like.
Right.
And I think that the pendulum in music is starting to go back another way where you need to or want to own an artifact of it. I think it's going the other way with books. I don't think that there are as many people that want to own first editions, that want to have the paperback. I think the model for books is shifting more to the library, is shifting more to the sharing of books. When was the last time you bought a book, Josh?
I mean, well, I'm not a great example.
I mean, you know, I full disclosure, I'm not in the industry anymore.
You know more than I would.
Well, no, but my point is, as a consumer of media, I don't have the expendable income anymore to buy as many books or have access to as many books as I used to.
Right.
So it's much easier for me to use what I think of as like the share model, like
Audible.
What's the fucking car thing?
Zipcar?
The Zipcar idea, yes. That, like, I don't have to own the book or the car to be able to read the book or get from point A to point B.
Well, and I think, again, it's ultimately about access. I think that's why streaming models became popular. You know, it turns out people they're willing to pay for music. You know, you're willing to pay for Spotify because it gives you access. Like, let me listen to your fucking album. And that's a lot of times how I feel about television shows. Like, if I miss the first couple seasons and then I go, hey, I want to start watching this show.
Right, and you don't put it anywhere.
And then I can't watch the first two seasons.
That sucks.
What am I supposed to just start watching on the third? Like, you have to give me access to your product, dude. And I think it's kind of the same in a lot of ways with books. Like, the more access that you have, the more people want to read. And I ultimately think that's kind of what, even though ebooks are on the way out in sort of a way, I think that's kind of what they did is people realized that with easy access, if you could sit in your living room and go, I wonder if I'd want to read that book.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, you know, 5 seconds later you have it. I think people realized, yeah, I do want to read.
Right.
And I am interested in books. People who maybe said like, I don't read. I'm not a big reader. Like if you have access to those things,
maybe
you are a reader.
But I think John's question stands, which is without the Barnes & Noble, without the, I mean, for music purposes, Sam Goody or The Wall or, you know, for DVDs,
Sam Goody.
Suncoast Video or, you know, without that huge financial driver.
I'm sure there's still like bins of DVDs at like Kmart. John.
You can get,
but they're not printing
the
DVDs.
Sandlot.
They're not printing, and
I would say this:
you don't have to cut down as many trees to make a DVD as you do to make a Neal Stephenson paperback.
Here's the thing: I think that books now, music now is more like how books are now. There's just so much music. Like there's so much music every day. I come across something and I'm like, I've never heard of this. That's how books are. Like. It's just decentralized now. You don't go to a place to get it anymore. You got to look for it.
Yeah, but I'm worried. His email makes me realize how worried I am about the industry.
I think on a macro scale. We're at a turning point. Like, this is almost a weird time to be having this discussion because we're at a turning point. People's interests and the way that they consume things is changing a little bit. And because we're essentially, I do think we're on the cusp of, we're no longer all going to be supportive, like unilaterally, of these big conglomerates. People aren't into it anymore. And that's going to be a really hard
pill to swallow.
Yeah. I completely disagree with that. I don't think it's about conglomerates. I think it's about price point. It's not a, I don't think we're making our buying decisions based on, we don't want to support.
No, it's not about support, business. but it's about, I do think that there's a push towards, people being more, more conscious consumers. I definitely think that's on the rise.
If that was the case, then Amazon stock would be going down every day, and it's not.
But my point is, things are shifting, but a shift takes a long time. This is not, you're not going to wake up tomorrow and, oh no, Amazon's out of business. That's not the way that it's going to happen. But I do think, you know, these models, these business models are no longer feasible. People aren't interested anymore. And so we're on this cusp where maybe we will start to see indie bookstores start to come back.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, maybe we will see independent music stores start to come back. Mm-hmm. We're not at that point yet where it's feasible enough, but we're on this brink. Maybe if things keep going the way that they're going, if people are more interested in consuming physical media, if we are no longer interested in shopping at a Barnes & Noble type store, maybe people are moving back towards a more personal experience. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a 5-year change. We could be talking about 20, 30 years in the future.
Yeah, I think about movies and music as compared to writing, right? How long has writing been around? 8,000 years. As soon as we fucking figured out how to make words on a paper, on a rock, a fucking piece of clay, we did that. And what do? We made receipts. Because there's something in us that needs to have that record. We gotta record that and put it somewhere. Music and movies have only been around for like 100 years. So there are still people alive when we were growing up who never had that stuff. And like,
it's so new.
It's so, like, the idea of owning a CD is like, well, there are people who were alive who just, like, when they listen to music, they're like, well, we just listen to the song, and then we just, like, it goes away. Like, they didn't have, like, the record of it. Like, literally the record, right? Like, but with books, like, there's something in human beings that, like, we have to keep it and put it somewhere and have it there. Because, like, we're fucked up like that. Like, we have to do it. Like, it's like how we have to, like, go places and look at shit. Like, there's something in us that makes us do that. I don't think books are going to stop because, like, we have to write things down and keep them, even if we don't even look at them anymore. If it's a receipt from fucking 8,000 years ago, somebody who did that, if we want to go look at it, we'll go look at it.
I want to agree with you, and I want to say that you're right, that the industry will continue to go on. But I feel like the way that the dynamics of business, and not just book business, but business in general, are moving, it's more like that receipt that you're talking about, mm-hmm. that punched out clay thing will just be, you know, an email that you have. And you can go, you know, here's my email where I said that I bought
a
book that is now
Other fucking topic. Now what are we, like, now what is the line between recorded information? Like, what's the difference between looking at a book in your eye and a computer in your eye?
Well, that was
like,
the question.
What's,
I mean,
the difference?
That was the question of music along, you know, the last 15 to 20 years was, you know, do I need to own a cassette, a record, or an MP3 versus, you know, the alternative?
Right.
And what I think we've seen is a nice blend of the Pandora, the Spotify, and the need to, you know,
yeah, possess. There's not one way to do it. Form. And that might be how books are, too. There isn't just one way to own that information. That's what you're talking about and saying. You're talking about, like, we're in this weird fucking murky, yeah, like, human, like, history moment where, like, we're trying to figure out, like, how do we still be people as human beings and but how do we get the things we need to sustain us, like art and stuff?
Right.
Like, it's a fucking huge question. Like, and
what
I don't
does it
know.
Mean? And what does it mean to have those things? And like yeah, what do I need saying? To possess and again, it? Do I need to own it?
I think people are starting to move towards a more, the like, this consciousness of, like, in the height of the music industry, it was just, you went to, you know, FYE or The Wall, and you handed over $20, and yeah, you got access to this
lifetime
music,
warranty
and
it was Wall.
Very much an, like, this impersonal
right.
exchange, and then, you know, it was, well, we want access to that music, I want to actually be able to listen to this music, I don't want to have to, you know,
buy
jump through
before
all these
I
huge,
listen to
right,
it.
Like, and then it was the artist going, what the fuck, dude, like, you have to pay me for the shit that I'm doing
wait,
for you.
Only because that's the way it was done for
and so, and
50
now
years.
We're sort of at this level where, you know, you can do a Kickstarter and, you know, you can be a patron to your favorite artist, and we're understanding, like, we want to pay these people. We think these people deserve to be paid for their time and for their contributions. Like, again, I think we're moving towards consciousness, and I think it's kind of slow, but it's also kind of fast, and I think we're getting there too with authors. Authors are accessible now; they're not like these anonymous figureheads.
Yeah, well, like
they're on Twitter and they're talking to you, and it's a person, and I like that person, and I want to support that person, and you know, I think again, we generally speaking, we want to pay for these things. We're happy to pay for books. I think it's less about ownership per se, which I think is kind of what you're getting at, Sean. Like,
well, I feel like what I'm getting at, and I'm not saying very well, is that I think what we're approaching with the publishing model is what music went through in the past 30 years, which is a decentralization, which is a discovery for the needlessness of the big five publishing houses,
mm-hmm,
and the idea that crowdsourcing or the discovery of talent will overtake the need for the big business model of it.
Yeah.
And I think the question in the email was, can publishing sustain that without some kind of digital model behind it? Because, you know, when record stores fell off, Steve Jobs was there to fill in with the iPod.
I really think that the music industry comparison is
I don't think that that's macro view. I don't.
I
think
also,
it's weird. Yeah,
I think
I
they're so different.
It's
based on
they're
what?
So
I mean,
they're
so it's that's not the macro.
I mean, the
view.
Idea
the macro
is,
view.
The idea is a big business invests in an artist
because
and then distributes that artist's
yes,
work.
The music
yes.
industry did it the way they did it for 50 years, and then a guy came along and said, "You don't need to do that anymore," and it fucked their whole shit up. Books have been
but
around
also,
for fucking
but
ever.
But also, the music industry, and this is, we talked about this on the Barnes & Noble episode, but the music industry killed themselves.
Yeah, they were dumb
and
about it.
We're still stuck in this story of like, well, we did it. We stopped buying
yeah,
music.
It's
we
our
were
fault.
So interested in pirating music, but
right.
the music industry killed itself because the music industry went, well, then you can't have it.
Right.
You can't have this. Well, so, you can't have access to this. And I don't think that the book industry is doing that.
Basing that disbelief that on what? Like what have you seen from the publishing industry? I don't have a counter argument, but I'm just wondering. Like you,
it's
have,
not
you
the
have
publishing industry.
Confidence
it's
and faith that
it's
that's
the,
not what we're
it's
doing.
Book
but
consumers. I think book consumers are. They're going. Yeah, we do want to buy books.
But are there enough of them? That's
Well, it might hurt them, but I don't think that people are going to stop making books. Like, that's like so.
I think what the ebook model has proven to us is that it's not feasible. People want to buy physical books.
Yeah, I don't think that there's going to be a Netflix for books.
This isn't a problem with consumers. I don't think. I don't think it's consumers, you know, buying books or not buying books. Maybe it is fair to compare it to the music industry, because again, I don't think the problem was ever, you know, well, people don't want to buy music. Right. And that was the narrative for so long. I don't think that was ever true. People did want to buy music.
It wasn't true.
They just didn't want to buy music in the way that they were forcing us to buy music.
And they weren't getting the maximum way to buy
music. I completely disagree. The model was people didn't, they may have wanted to buy music, but they didn't have to anymore. The technology existed that they didn't want to have to buy music
at exorbitant prices, music that they had never listened to. And you could only really, like, you were being told to only buy a handful of albums.
Right, they were picking and choosing.
They were picking and choosing for you. Your options were limited.
I agree with you, and I don't want to throw publishing under the bus. But couldn't you say the same thing about publishing?
If they're greedy,
like,
yes.
The publishing houses only have the budget to sign up as many authors as they can. So the authors that fly under the radar, your Chuck Tingles.
Yes, but it doesn't feel like it. When I go into a bookstore, there are so many options. And so many authors and so many different kinds of authors available to me. And it doesn't feel like, you know, when I used to go into an FYE and it was like, you want an indie label? Good luck.
Yeah, but when you go to a bookstore and search authors, there are tens of thousands that you don't find in a bookstore. I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm worried about this. Walk into any bookstore and buy an indie book and buy a little known book and from a little known author from a smaller publisher. And, you know, like, are there niche bookstores like that? Yes. And will I find more there and a higher concentration of that? Yes. But I don't know. I think you're being...
I'm being obtuse. I'm being deliberately obtuse. No, I'm serious.
No shit. Because... And also, you're being incredibly pessimistic about what I think is... Like, again, if they don't shoot themselves in the foot, because the music industry shot themselves in the foot, they deliberately blew themselves up and then blamed consumers.
And the movie industry is doing it also, choosing an easier path.
They're
doing the same thing.
And the television industry is about to do the same thing to themselves. Yes.
Whether we blame consumers or retailers, and I think that...
Well, I think that's an important part of it. The question from the email is,
if Barnes & Noble goes away, which is a legitimate concern at this point, if Barnes & Noble goes away, can the publishing industry as we know it sustain?
Yes, if they keep publishing books... then people will find a way to sell them.
Yes. There will be another Barnes & Noble. It'll just be another thing.
Borders went under, and everybody said Barnes & Noble will take it over. And now if Barnes & Noble goes under, everything goes to Target.
This is like
BJ's.
Turning into like a too big to fail argument. Like, this isn't this capitalism? Isn't this the thing that everyone...
No, what's going to end up happening is if Barnes & Noble goes under, you're going to depend on the indies and Target and BJ's.
It'll be hard.
Anne Rice and Stephen King, and you will not find the small.
So your argument is: should we lose Barnes & Noble? That's it. Goodbye forever.
No, I think that
that's it. That's it for books. We won't be able to get, you know, any kind of...
How many more times do I have to say no to your question before you rephrase it? No. No, that's not what I'm saying. No.
Okay,
no.
Okay, then what are you? I don't understand what the argument is. We're arguing that yes, you. Physical books, there will not be a better model than, you know, buying physical books. There will not be an
You're not
going to
reinvent the wheel on that one,
so,
I don't think.
You know, should Barnes & Noble go under, the industry will resurface, and it will probably be smaller booksellers.
Here's a very optimistic view coming from me, okay? what will happen is it'll be hard, and publishing industry will have to lay people off, and people will not have a job, and they'll go crazy, and they'll think, we gotta only do the best-selling books, right? And then what's gonna happen? Just like music, people are gonna write their own book, they're gonna record audiobooks for it, people are gonna find it. If it's really good, typically the cream rises or whatever. And then they're going to print that book that was an audiobook in a book. Like, that's what they're going to do. It's not a straight line. It'll be a little zigzaggy, but, like, eventually, I don't think books are going to just stop being books.
That's not what I was saying at all. I was just saying that I think that the idea that if we lose the largest or second largest after Amazon market for a product, that the industry that makes that product will be able to continue as it has.
It won't be. Well, nothing can continue as it has.
No one's arguing that it will continue as it has.
What I'm saying, though, is that you will find it to be what the music industry did, which was you will only be able to go to the bookstores and find the things that sell.
But I can listen to anything I want now. And like,
yeah, I mean, kind of the scenario that you're proposing, Sean, is actually, it kind of sounds like the best case scenario. You mean I will have access, unlimited access to all the books that I want? Because that's kind of what happened with music. I can just go directly to the musician that I like and say, and here's my money and get the music from them. So that sounds like a great model for the book industry. You know, like, I love Neal Stephenson. Here's my money. Right. Neal Stephenson directly to him. Doesn't that sound amazing?
Potentially. I mean, if you want to have the digital copy of Neal Stephenson's book. Neal Stephenson doesn't deal in paper. Neal Stephenson doesn't deal in ink. Neal Stephenson doesn't deal in distribution. You asked me a question. Give me a chance to answer it. Neal Stephenson doesn't deal in the supply chain making books.
You might have to.
Okay, and a musician doesn't physically press their own records, but somehow they can still send me an album if I ask for it.
So then you're back to an ebook idea.
They still make albums and CDs.
Yeah.
We did that when I was in high school. We made albums. Yeah. I was a fucking 16-year-old kid. Yeah. Like you're thinking about this linearly because you were there.
I'm dealing with the question that was asked, which is, can the publishing industry continue to exist if the second
it will exist. It'll just be different.
I think honestly, maybe the part of the disconnect here is that, Sean, I think you are concerned with the publishing industry specifically, the publishing end of it. And stop being combative for a second. And I think Josh and I are dealing with the book industry as a whole. I think we're sort of arguing about two separate ends.
Looking at
you're arguing about the publishing industry itself. Josh and I are arguing about the bigger book industry, just books, however they're consumed, just books, the end, period. You're specifically talking about like paper and ink publishing, like the actual publishers and those companies and what they encompass. I think that's kind of why we keep butting heads and why there's a grand misunderstanding here is you're talking about the end of the publishing industry, which I think all of this makes more sense if I look at it from that point of view. Okay, publishing, yes, because the big publishers, you're right, they're in trouble.
They're not going to be able to do what they've been doing.
Right, they won't be able to do. But
then you will lose your authors.
And, well,
people still write books, though, is what me and Zane are saying.
Authors and you know, graphic artists and stuff like that. Will they be releasing their stuff in the high volume, you know, with the wide distribution at first? No, they won't. It'll go down to kind of what we've seen from musicians, smaller indie musicians, Kickstarters, Patreons, stuff like that.
Pay for the album what you want.
Exactly.
Pay for the book what
small
you want.
Printings. But will you still be able to buy a physical book? Yes. Will people still be buying physical books? Yes. Will that money instead basically go directly to the artist or the author? Yeah, probably.
Probably. Minus
but
whatever
will
it costs.
The actual publishing industry itself exist in the same way? No, probably not.
Probably not.
So, but that's what I mean. I think we're talking about kind of two different ends of this topic. Do you see that?
I see what you're saying, but I don't think they're as inherently disconnected as you're minimizing it to.
I don't know that they're disconnected. I'm just saying that people will still write books, and people will still print books, and people will still buy books.
I don't think
that you will see... But the publishing industry, as we're talking about it, no, that won't function the same way without these big companies to move those books in those numbers.
There will still be Amazon to move big books in big numbers.
Absolutely, and there's still an Interscope Records.
And I think that what you will see is... 15 million copies of every Danielle Steele, Stephen King, and Nora Roberts novel, and...
Well, then you just have to not buy those, then. People just, like, that... This is, like, capitalism 101, right? Like, if you don't like it, don't buy it, then they'll be like, okay, well, they don't like this, we gotta do other stuff. And it's gonna suck. Like, well, it'll suck.
If we're running with the music industry comparison, there's still, like, Beyonce albums, right? And she's still selling, I mean, not, you know, no one's selling, like, 20 million records anymore, but, like, you know, Beyonce and Taylor Swift are selling a fuck ton of records, and they're on major labels, and they have major label money. But, you know, I can also go directly to Amanda Palmer's Patreon and buy a vinyl record from her for, you know, $1 a month.
Yeah, you're just going to have to look harder. You're going to have to be responsible for, like, what you want. And I think millennials are used to that, because I think we're used to the idea that, like, oh, well, I'll just, like, go look around for this shit, because, like, I've had to my whole life, right? Like, since the internet was a thing when I was in high school, it was like, well, I want this, like, Weezer B-side. Well, I gotta go look for it. What is it on, you know?
Right.
And, like, I'm used to thinking that way, but, like, people who want to go and be told, like, what to get, like...
Like, to browse in a traditional bookstore. Right. And that, I mean...
That's gonna be different.
That will be different, absolutely. So, I mean...
I don't think that I... go to a bookstore to be told what to look for.
Well, I wasn't saying you.
I think that you're saying, other than millennials, we're told what to look for. Pretty sure that's exactly what you just said.
I meant people who, like, maybe they're not sure what they want. They go to a bookstore and they say, I don't know what I want. And then someone comes up to you and say, well, have you read Danielle Steele?
Well, whatever. But you are, I mean, not, to be told, being told what to read is a stretch.
Sure.
But, you know, sort of, you're given a certain amount of options.
You go into
a bookstore and, you know, the big publishers are there, again, a music store, you know, and they're only stocking major label stuff. And so you kind of go, these are my options.
Right.
That was my frustration with music on the radio when I was younger.
It's the radio.
It felt like there were only, you know, 20 bands that I was able to listen to. That's it. Oh, I guess it's, you know, it's top 40 hits or nothing.
Right.
You know, so being told what to read is a stretch for that scenario, though.
I'm always told what to read when I come on here.
That's true.
You don't do it.
Yeah, because I won't be told what to read, Sean.
I'm a millennial.
Flip the table over.
All right.
We solved it forever. Question answered.
Sean is super pissed.
Not at all.
And we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Previously on Cracking the Spine Show.
No, you shut up! You shut
up! And I can do some Foley.
I already started recording.
Oh,
welcome back to Cracking the Spine Show. I'm Josh.
I'm Zane.
This is episode 95. Yeah, I know, Zane.
Well, you said it like it was a question.
No, I was saying...
No, I didn't.
That's what I was saying? God, Zane has been so confrontational this episode, you guys.
That's right. I think that's right. I don't want to tell you to listen to this show, but you should definitely listen to the show and read books.
Wow, that was, I was like, what show is he talking about?
And then as underhanded, as backhanded a compliment or endorsement as we've ever gotten from Josh, other than a retweet. By the way, we have to pay him $15 for that.
For a retweet.
For a retweet?
No, for what he just said.
No, you have to pay me $15 per retweet that gets retweeted. It's $15 each time.
So wait, if you retweet it, it's $15?
$15, and then every
subsequent retweet. That Henderson bump. You gotta pay for it, man.
It's not free. You gotta pay for that Henderson bump. I'm a professional smartass on the internet.
No, I think we need to prorate those. Like, because you have a lot of people that follow you that are, like, less than, like, 100 followers. And I feel like, not, guys, don't get me wrong, if you're one of those people, whoa, you're awesome.
Way to alienate, like, a lot of our listeners.
I just feel like they're not, those retweets aren't worth as much as, like, say.
Man, I guess now I know how Dwayne Sean Swierczynski feels about me retweeting the show myself.
Hashtag.
You have way more followers than I do, Zane.
Yeah, you're goddamn right I do.
But your retweets are worth more than, say,
what?
At stupid fart underscore.
Why are you throwing him under the bus?
You apologize to him. Stupid he is fart? A nice person.
He emails me his stories.
I will apologize to him if you guys can tell me who I need to apologize to.
Stupid fart 1869 or
not
whatever
what
the fuck he
not
said.
Not at all what I said. Zane?
Stupid fart person, I think is what it
nope,
was.
Totally not what
stupid
I said.
Stupid fart.
What I tried to say before I was interrupted was, that's stupid fart 6969.
Okay.
I think it may have been an underscore in there.
Where?
Okay.
At stupid fart well, underscore 69.
Super
69.
Duper remember yeah. the thing that you're trying to hold yep. us to.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at my Instagram.
All I'm saying is, I'm saving myself $15.
How many followers do you have?
On Instagram, like 1,000.
Oh, you know, who can keep track? Like 69.
At least 69.
At least.
At least.
Facebook.
Twitter.
Can we talk about the amazing fan art that we got?
I forgot about it.
Holy crap.
I actually thought we would do the next week's episode on that.
Oh, we could
just on the fan art?
Yeah.
I would talk about that for like 20 minutes at least.
Where it I look amazing. Like...
you look great. I've never seen you look so great.
You're sitting in front of me.
All I I'm see right is here. All I see is the painting. All I see, there it is. Nailed it, dude.
Why is Josh the only one in color? I mean, why is Zane the only one in color?
Because I think
first of all, because I'm amazing.
No, yeah. I know you're amazing.
Also yeah, because,
but Josh is amazing too.
I'm not as amazing
clearly
as Zane.
Amazing. That's also, what? I got ponies in the background.
Yeah, I know.
And those ponies.
You got them
thigh high boots.
Also, shout out to Sam Lindstrom who
Sam.
Is the artist.
Wait, why didn't I have actual soundboard? I have it. Hold on.
Also, I felt like there were layers to it.
Yeah, agreed.
Our fan art, like, Week of Eternity, it was amazing.
It was well done.
It was
done.
Amazing.
If you guys haven't checked it out, you can check our retweets.
Yeah, we'll retweet it again. Whoa, what is this, a professional fucking podcast? Jesus.
Wait a minute, have you gotten so big that you won't even do a fucking mouth air horn it?
Josh
will not do a klaxon anymore. He has a klaxon fucking...
It's $15.
$15 for our air horn. That's like $200.
Well, I've got good news for you. Because we just have the money rolling in.
Let me offset some of those costs.
The free air horn?
It's... Every time I do that, it offsets one that you did.
Oh, it's like...
Every time you do that, someone else, one of the listeners, owes us money.
Oh, this is a sweet...
And Angel gets its wings.
This is a sweet business model.
Anyway, we freaking loved the fan art.
More fan art.
And more, please,
and send us more
and
topic
everyone.
Suggestions because it really gets our blood boiling.
Yeah, man. Send us those emails. Go to the subreddit.
There's a $15 prize for
talk
whoever...
Us there.
For whoever gets $15 prize for whoever actually gets us to stab the other person when talking about a topic race,
it's
which
bounty.
Was almost earned tonight.
It's almost.
I didn't think you got that bad.
I'm pretty sure you guys wanted to stab me.
That had nothing to do with the topic.
I don't think I would stab you. I would definitely hit you in the head with like a rock.
Whoa, dude.
That's
somehow that's worse.
That's blunt stabbing. That's
blunt,
that counts.
That's
so, blunt
I think
stabbing.
It's called bludgeoning, but good work.
Bludgeoning.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
No, I wasn't ready to do that. I was fine. I was totally fine the whole time.
I was totally fine.
You sound fine.
I sound totally so fine. Officer, I'm fine tonight.
I'm only drunk, shit.
Anyway.
We love you. We
super duper love you. Thanks for everything. And,
Zane is really sorry that this episode went so long.
I'm so sorry. Deepest apologies. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah, my soundboard's somehow an asshole.
Did you hear me, listeners? I said, we'll see you next week.
In a week.
Check them out. Books. Check them out. At your library.